Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Here tonight, it's Ian and Chris.
And nobody.
The federal government in the United States is on a full-on assault, and has been for some time, against the world of cryptocurrency. We know it personally because they came after some of the show hosts here, including me and you, nobody.
That's
true. As well as Aria. In the Crypto 6 case, and that was for simply selling Bitcoin peer-to-peer, as they call it. But they're also going big. They've been going after mega companies in the crypto space. They targeted Kraken, which is a big crypto exchange, a few weeks ago, and they told Kraken they were going to bring a case against them if they didn't settle. And Kraken did decide to settle for $30 million, but the case was going to be in regards to... Yeah. And they figured that would be cheaper. To just pay the $30 million to the SEC and then end their staking program, which is what that particular case was about.
Okay, I was going to say, are they required to change their business model? Because if not, then it was just pure extortion.
Yep, they cannot offer the staking service that they were offering to their U.S. customers anymore. So that's the requirement there. And so when that happened... It wasn't hard to predict that they were going to go after anybody else offering staking. And Coinbase, which is, of course, the company that probably is maybe a little larger than Kraken. I'm not sure who does more volume at the moment. They're both very, very large exchanges in the United States.
They're more obedient than Kraken, though.
They definitely are. Yeah. Coinbase has been cozying up to the regulators from the word go, basically.
Didn't help.
And no, as it turns out, it did not help them one iota.
You know who else I think they went after recently was, Paxios? Or I'm not sure.
Paxos, is a company that was assisting Binance, the world's largest exchange, in issuing their own stablecoin.
And they came to New Hampshire and testified at one of our hearings on crypto, if you recall.
There was a Paxos rep that's testified against me at the Crypto 6 trial. I think you might be thinking.
Am I confusing that with the?
No, there was another crypto exchange that came to New Hampshire. I think you're confusing. You might be right.
Now, when you say against you, did she say anything that was particularly inflammatory,
or just
report your transaction?
Yeah, she was just on the stand as a witness from Paxos, which was one of the exchanges that, you know, we were buying Bitcoin from and such.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to remember the one that you're referring to, Chris. It was Poloniex. That was the one that
it was started with a P.
Yeah,
this is why I'm getting them confused.
Yeah. Yep. So Poloniex, which is
this was years ago too.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. So they're going after the big guys. They got their way with Kraken without even really having to lift a finger besides typing up the threat letter to Kraken. And they're now doing the same thing with Coinbase. Now, interestingly, the Coinbase had made a statement when Kraken folded. Coinbase spoke out and said, well, we believe we're doing staking legally and we are prepared to fight. Well, a few weeks later, the fight just got brought to them. The SEC has now issued what is called a Wells notice to Coinbase, which is a heads up, basically, that they're intending to bring probably a civil case. I doubt this is going to be criminal charges, but they do intend to bring a case against Coinbase. This, according to CNBC. Unlike Kraken, Coinbase is intending to fight this thing, apparently. According to Coinbase. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Coinbase in a regulatory filing. They said this. Based on discussions with staff, the company believes these potential enforcement actions would relate to aspects of the company's spot market, staking service Coinbase Earn, which is their name for that, Coinbase Prime, don't know what that is, and Coinbase Wallet, said Coinbase in a regulatory filing. They said further, the potential civil action may seek injunctive relief, disgorgement, and civil penalties, which is pretty standard. But right now, it sounds like Coinbase is speculating on what this is going to involve. The SEC apparently has not revealed yet the aspect of Coinbase's business that they're going to be targeting.
So that's normally done in the complaint, as I understand it.
Haven't gotten that far yet.
So it sounds like the lawsuit is not even filed.
Correct. They've just been given what is called a Wells notice, which is essentially a heads up. It says here, a Wells notice is typically one of the final steps before the SEC formally issues charges. It generally lays out the framework of the regulatory argument and offers the potentially accused an opportunity to rebut the SEC's claims.
So a Wells notice tells you that there's not far to go.
That's right. We're coming. We're coming. We're coming for you, bro. Yeah.
I wonder if that's also to notify somebody that they basically have to preserve evidence. Once you're aware that there's some sort of pending civil litigation,
you can't delete stuff or whatever.
Have to preserve stuff, yeah.
The SEC's-
I think it's usually a subpoena that would specify what stuff.
But I think even before a subpoena comes, you can't delete stuff if you know there's a pending, some sort of pending civil action against you.
Apparently the Wells notice did mention some things. According to Brian Armstrong, who is the CEO over at Coinbase, he says, today, Coinbase received a Wells notice from the SEC focused on staking. So again, we pretty much predicted that one when they went after Kraken. And he says, asset listings. So it sounds like they're going to tell Coinbase, these assets we, the SEC, have determined are securities. And therefore, you shan't list them without going through all the stupid, you know, hoops that you would have to jump through in order to sell securities to people, which basically means you can't sell them to anyone with the exception of what they call, there's accredited investors. That's what
now, that would be an interesting thing. Because,
and that's basically millionaires.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Basically, if in order to get into a startup in America, you have to be able, because that's where the potential earnings are the biggest. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to prove that you're already a millionaire before they'll let you invest in that kind of thing. Because, you know, the socialists know what's best for you.
Well, and we wouldn't want the little guy to actually get a leg up by buying an investment at its lowest potential price, you know, when it's first offered. Only the ultra wealthy should have access to those opportunities.
Yeah, because, you know, it could do all kinds of damage to you if you made a bunch of money. You know, it could be, there's all kinds of things that might do to you. Look at what happens to people who win the lottery. Well, so they have to protect you from not being poor.
Well, this is one of the things that when it comes to people getting into cryptocurrency, this is why they want to stop crypto, because crypto doesn't have the rails that prevent you from, you know, making mistakes or whatever that supposedly these government regulated systems do, which is total BS, because you could totally buy stocks.
I was going to say, like, they really don't have rails at all in the first place. I mean, look at the Crypto 6 case. They had 7 or 8 people testify, you know, so-called victims testify against you, and every single one of them said that the banks, you know, the banks never called them.
Yeah. See,
you know,
they didn't do KYC. I can't agree with
but
that
you did.
Because they railroad a lot of people, and you can't railroad people without rails.
The SEC ended up putting out a notice later that said, hey, look, just because you want to be a qualified custodian doesn't mean you will meet the requirements to be a qualified custodian. So they've recently been acting like, hey, just come on in, sit down.
You know,
we'll tell you what to do. And then
come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly.
Right.
you know what's interesting is the choice of words, qualified custodian, which suggests if they have custody, but if it's decentralized and they don't have custody.
Well, anything on Coinbase, they have custody of.
Sure, but what if they changed their system? So you go to
a decentralized exchange?
It's decentralized, and they're not holding it.
It'll never happen. There's no money to be made for them on that.
I don't know.
Decentralized exchanges can make money by charging fees.
You could charge fees and have the
maybe not
exchanges
the same
themselves.
Kind of money that Coinbase make.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if they're holding a coin and that coin goes up, the value of their assets goes up, but the value of their liabilities also goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that big. It's not like it's not like their dollar liabilities stay the same while their dollar assets skyrocket.
I don't think you're going to see Coinbase evolve into a decentralized exchange. I just don't. That's not their business model.
I'm not saying
I don't
that's going to happen either,
likely.
But. It's something that they could potentially, I have a feeling they could potentially do, you know, and basically be the on-ramp without actually, while sort of skirting some of the regulations, if that's the regulations that the government's going to you know, put forth.
But if they are taken down, you might see them replaced by decentralized
exchanges. Oh, I hope so. Yeah, absolutely. People need to look into those. ThorChain is probably the world's most prominent that I've heard of. I heard BISC is still in operation. I don't know how busy it is. BISQ and then ThorChain. There's another one that's about to launch called Maya, which is a ThorChain fork. So those are the ones to really, I would say, keep your eyes on. If there's another one I don't know about, I know Atomic Dex was out there for a while, but it's essentially banned in the United States. So
really?
You can't download it, at least easily, from the United States. Well, this was as of 2 years ago, the last time I tried to do it.
So what, the software?
In the last 6 months, I'm pretty sure I've downloaded the source code to that and built
to Atomic Dex?
From Coinbase, if I'm not wrong. I'm sorry, not Coinbase, but GitHub.
That you could probably do if you're building it yourself, but as of the last time I looked, which again was a couple of years ago, they were blocking people from the United States from downloading the binary, the actual executable files of that.
I mean, that just seems so weird if it's decentralized, because I mean,
it's
software
not.
Aspect is... Yeah, that might be the
and
issue.
And that's one of the takeaways, by the way, from this SEC attack that I'm going to... This is a multi-pronged attack. We're only talking about Coinbase right now, but another one they went after just this week was something called SushiSwap, which is a supposedly decentralized finance, decentralized exchange for, I believe it's Ethereum tokens in the case of SushiSwap. I could be wrong about that. But it's one of the biggies. You know, there's like Uniswap and then there's SushiSwap. So they're going after them because they're not fully decentralized and there's some centralized aspect of it that they were able to target. So they're going at big. They're going after a lot of these guys. But let's get back into the Coinbase story here. So what's going on? According to CNBC, the SEC has ramped up its enforcement on the crypto industry, bearing down on companies and projects that the regulator alleges were hawking unregistered securities. Reports first surfaced of an SEC probe in Coinbase in mid-2022. So Gary Gensler is the chairman of the SEC at this moment, and he's the one who's leading this charge against cryptocurrency. He has said publicly that he believes that every cryptocurrency except for Bitcoin is a security. We've got Sheriff David Hathaway from Arizona down there on the border. Welcome, sir. You're back on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening, guys. I wanted to talk about an especially disgusting police shooting that happened in Tucson. The charges were recently dismissed against the officer. If you go to YouTube, you can search for shooting wheelchair Tucson, and you'll see it. The officer was named Ryan Remington. He shot a man in a wheelchair 9 times in the back as the man in the wheelchair was driving about 1 or 2 miles an hour through a parking lot. And it was so heinous that the officer actually got indicted. The name of the man that was killed was Richard Richards. The officer was Ryan Remington. Mm-hmm. And initially, a judge dismissed the indictment, saying that it needed to be re-indicted. This was about 6 months ago, saying, well, you needed to mention to the grand jury whether the man would have possibly been capable of getting out of the wheelchair. So I'm going to dismiss it, and you have to re-indict it. So recently, I think it was about a month or two ago, the prosecutor decided to not re-indict it. So it's been dismissed with no possibility of refiling. So, but if you look that up on YouTube, the best channel to watch it on is one called Police Activity, because it doesn't have any of the evening news type openings and closers. It's just the body cam video,
the raw footage. I remember this one, actually. Yeah. David, we talked about this at the time that it was going down. You basically have a man in a motorized wheelchair who is, I think he was like leaving some sort of department store, and he had a knife in his hands, allegedly, right? Wasn't that what was going on, if I recall correctly?
Yeah, like a store employee said when he left Walmart, said, do you have a receipt for that toolbox? He had a toolbox in his lap. And then he said, I have your receipt right here. And he was holding a knife in his hand. And he just kept going he didn't brandish the knife or point it at anybody. He just kept going into the parking lot. And then a Tucson police officer that was hired as private security, he wasn't working for the police department right then, but he was in uniform and everything, in his official uniform, approached the guy, real slow motion pursuit through the parking lot, shot him 9 times in the back. And then you can see all that in the footage and, you know, and I,
crazy.
It was crazy. I mean, it's surprising that they ever indicted the guy, but it was just so heinous and obvious from the body cam footage that
was did this cop try to claim, as so many of them do, that he feared for his life from a man in a wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair who was trying to get away from him? Was that his excuse for why he had to shoot this man to death?
I think the more claim was that he could be a potential danger to the public.
Who?
But you know this, you know this also shows the moral hazard of being private companies being able to hire a police officer who has qualified immunity. That guy can just do whatever he wants, and the liability won't fall back on the store. If it was regular private security hired by the store would very likely be liable for the actions of that private security. But it's dismissed. Because they hire an actual Tucson police officer.
So he still has his job, I presume?
Yeah, he has his job. Mm-hmm. Ryan Remington, no negative consequences. I'm not aware of any civil lawsuits. It just, you know, I would encourage the listeners to actually go watch that video to actually be able to see there was nothing threatening going on.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, was this a guy who had been... If I recall correctly, there was one guy, he was in a wheelchair because Texas police had shot him, and then he moved out of Texas, and the police, wherever he moved, finished the job. Is that this case?
I'm not sure. I don't know the man's history before the incident in Tucson, but yeah. But anyway, that's all I had for you guys. I just thought that was especially disgusting. And the first time as a female judge, I don't know if she thought the officer was cute or whatnot, but she just, I'm going to dismiss this. You got to, like, re-indict the guy. And during the indictment, you have to mention whether the person was able of getting out of the wheelchair to pose a threat. And, you know, I think it's, you know, the jury is supposed to be the trier of fact in the case. And to say there's not even enough for a jury to look at, there's not even the possibility. If a judge throws a case out, you know, before it goes to a jury, it means that prima facie, there's no question that a jury could even consider. It's a waste of time for the jury and for the court and the court reporter and all that, because there's prima facie, there's no case whatsoever.
At least we know that in the case of our friends over at Library, who recently lost a case to the SEC, they have been ruined. It is not potentially ruinous for them. Their company has been absolutely destroyed. Their employees are gone. They have no way of paying employees at this point. In fact, they're not even done doing the damage yet, because the so-called settlement phase of the case is still in progress with Library. They're still trying to figure out just how much blood they are going to try to extract from the stone at this point in this particular case, and they've demanded that Library obey a final set of discovery requirements in the case. So even though they've already lost, Library, which is basically Jeremy Kaufman, the founder, because he's the only one essentially left, he has to jump through whatever these discovery hoops are that this judge has put in front of him in order for the final steps to be completed in the case. So that's where we're at there. It has destroyed Library. Will this destroy Coinbase? Remains to be seen. Coinbase says they think they can push back on this. Their founder, Brian Armstrong, and for listeners that don't know, Coinbase is like probably the top cryptocurrency exchange inside the United States. He points out that they received a Wells notice from the SEC. This was 2 days ago. He says, 2 years ago, the SEC reviewed our business in detail and approved Coinbase to go public. He says our S-1, some government form, clearly explained our asset listing process and includes 57 references to staking. Coinbase runs a rigorous asset review process and has rejected more than 90% of assets that have applied to be listed on the platform.
How are they going to defend that? Like, if they've approved it to go public, and it was there when they approved it to go public, you think that would have been the time to, you know,
to object,
right? Like, it seems like that is suggestive. to the fact that they are operating, you know, within their SEC's, you know, rules and operations.
A lot of people don't understand how the rules work, and the way the rules work are: if you screw up, you've got to pay. If the regulators screw up, you've got to pay. If the prosecutors screw up, you've got to pay. If the judge screws up, you've got to pay. No matter who screws up, the peasant has to pay.
Yep.
Sounds well, about right.
In this case, these certainly aren't peasants. Coinbase is one of the elites out there. But you know, it's hard to feel bad for Coinbase in this particular case, but I do still take their side of it. I hope that they can have some success here. I wish them the best in this. But it's hard to feel bad for them because they've been trying to cozy up to the rulers for a very, very long time. So it's like the bad versus the bad in this case. It's hard to hold my nose and take Coinbase's side in this, but that's basically what I'm doing at this point.
Definitely true. They to some extent it's tempting to think, you know, if you live by the regulation, you die by the regulation.
And they may yet.
No.
And it's I'm not going to cheer I will say this I will not cheer their demise, but it's going to be hard to really be too excited to back them in this case. Certainly I'm not going to donate to their legal funds or anything like that.
Yeah,
because they're still calling for there was some sort of post that they made. I don't know if it was today. I don't have it in front of me, but they're basically still angling. They said something like crypto needs rules, not enforcement or something. There was like something they didn't like, but they still like the idea of there being this structure, this government regulation system. And so they're not going libertarian after this or anything like that.
Yeah. And of course, rules are essential, but rules are for crypto in the code.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can read the rules and anybody can understand the rules and any computer can interpret the rules and enforce the rules.
What we're sharing with you here is how Coinbase, according to their own blog post, attempted to cozy up to these regulators for years. They even went in and had conversations with the SEC, spent millions of dollars trying to develop a regulatory structure for companies to follow, because they had asked, according to their post, they'd asked the SEC, or the SEC asked them, sorry, to be clear, the SEC told them, could you provide us your views on a registration path for Coinbase? The reason is because the SEC didn't have one. They didn't have any kind of structure,
you know,
in place.
It's funny how, you know, we always tell people don't talk to police, right?
Yes.
And yet these businesses have not learned. They've not learned that lesson.
Don't talk to regulators in this case, right?
Yeah, they're another form of police. They're another policing organization.
They absolutely are. And they can bring criminal charges.
Yeah.
In this case, they have not done that. It's probably going to be a civil case, but they could. They developed two different registration models and spent millions of dollars on lawyers to build these proposals. And as you guys pointed out in the last segment, the reason they are doing this is not because they want to help the industry, but because they want to help themselves by being the first to create this structure that then everybody else will have to spend millions of dollars trying to jump through the hoops.
They want to keep the competition out. They want to keep the small players out. They want to establish that industry. Whoever's in there, fine, you know, it's big. But anybody else who wants to get into that, you know, industry, nope, can't do it because the barriers to entry are too high.
But it's interesting here looking at their own explanation of what happened, and that is they asked for the SEC's feedback, and they received none. We also reiterated that we stand by our listing process, that we don't list securities today, and repeatedly invited the SEC to raise any questions about any asset at all on our platform. They raised none. They say here, we met with the SEC more than 30 times over 9 months, but we were doing all the talking. In December of 2022, we asked the SEC again for some feedback on our proposals. The SEC staff agreed to provide feedback in January of this year. And then in January, the day before our scheduled meeting, the SEC canceled on us and told us they would be shifting back to an enforcement investigation. We now understand that there's a disagreement within the commission on how to proceed with the registration path, and this was just 2 months ago. The investigation is still at a very early stage. We've produced documents and provided two witnesses for testimony, one on the basic aspects of our staking services and one on the basic operation of our trading platform. At no point in this investigation has the SEC told us a single, specific concern about a single asset on our platform. To move to a Wells notice now is unusual, to say the least. Well, it was unusual when they charged me in the Crypto 6 case with four counts of tax evasion without ever having sent a single letter from the IRS. That's unusual by definition.
That's pretty crazy. You definitely will normally get notified.
Right. Normally, they want to tell
you. By the IRS.
Right. Yeah. They normally want to tell you and give you a chance to cut a check.
Yeah.
Right. No, in this case, they just went straight to criminal charges.
They want to settle up with you. They want to have some sort of settlement. They don't want to have to go to court. They don't have to do all that. That costs them effort and time, and then they actually have to put a case together.
Well, unless you're a political target.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that's
the difference between the
average person.
The average person then with the IRS.
What were they doing during the Trump administration?
Investigating us.
Okay. But were they bringing charges against anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Or is this a Biden thing?
No, they were bringing charges against people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Republicans and Democrats aren't that different from
local Bitcoiners have been going down for years, and it's always the same pattern. They always have the undercover guy who makes some buys, and then they say they're a heroin dealer, and then the person probably sells to them, and then they get them for money laundering on a plea deal.
This is something you can actually go back into old archives of Free Talk Live, and we've talked about this on air.
Yeah,
about
some of the cases.
How many stories have we done where the government has sent in an undercover Fed to ask about to purchase crypto specifically from another individual who sold it, and they would do this usually two or three times, and then the third time they would say, this is it, this is the standard tactic for crypto investigations. They would say, I'm involved in
heroin.
Drug dealing. They'll say, heroin or sex trafficking or the combination
of the two. Because
heroin
looks the worst in front of a jury.
Right. And then, of course, while you're in the middle of a transaction, you have their money. That's when they're saying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's right when you can't back out. And, of course, you're now afraid because you're dealing with some sort of violent thug that you didn't know until they just told you. And if you don't finish the transaction, who knows what that person might do to you?
So they claim here that instead of developing a regulatory framework, the SEC is continuing to regulate by enforcement only. We recently explained in an amicus brief the lack of guidance for crypto companies to follow. And this, by the way, is what Library has determined as well. They told the SEC, just tell us what to do and we'll do it. We don't want to spend time fighting this in court. We don't want to spend money fighting this in court. We don't like you guys, but we understand you're going to hurt us. So just tell us what to do. You've got the gun to our head. We'll do it. And they wouldn't tell them.
But the answer is, be old money. Don't be new money.
Yeah.
Don't be somebody who was middle class and is now getting ahead.
Yeah.
Be somebody who's always been rich. And then we'll let you do whatever you want.
Right. That's the point. There's nothing that Library could do.
Yeah.
In fact, Library spoke out on this Coinbase thing recently on their Twitter account, which is at LBRYCOM. They say, we stand with Coinbase 100%. What the SEC is doing to them isn't just misinformed, they're intentionally evil people. But unfortunately, if the standards of the SEC versus Library case hold, Coinbase was almost certainly breaking the law. We don't want this to be true, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so Coinbase is going to probably have to find out the hard way. As Jeremy Kaufman points out in a follow-up, he says, I hope Brian Armstrong, that's a Coinbase CEO, is finally learning there is no path to success through compliance. He needs to be playing offense, not defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably a little too late for that. So Coinbase says, nevertheless, we've continued to try and engage with the SEC. In addition to our attempts to develop a registration path, we have repeatedly, formally asked the SEC to engage in rulemaking for our industry. We filed a petition for rulemaking last summer. On Monday, we submitted another substantive comment letter in support of the petition, detailing the need for clarity around the SEC's views of staking services and the lack of notice to the industry about any SEC concerns. Well, the SEC, as far as they're concerned, put you on notice when they threatened Kraken and got $30 million out of them. That was their idea of letting the industry know what they thought about staking.
Notice by extortion.
And by the way, my prediction, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see any reason why I would be wrong about this at this point. If they can go after staking, they can go after mining, right? Like, if staking is illegal and a security, then why can't they say mining is an illegal security? Because for listeners that don't know, staking is essentially the alternative to mining, generally. There's two major ways of, quote-unquote, securing a cryptocurrency network. There's proof of work, which is what is mining. And then there's proof of stake, which is requires you to have some cryptocurrency, and then you, quote-unquote, stake it. And then you are helping to process the transactions on the network.
You know,
through that system.
You know what else is interesting?
They both earn, okay? So the staking earns... You get more coins by staking, and when you mine, when you find blocks, you get coins through that system. So anyway, go ahead with your point.
Yeah, Ethereum, they changed their model.
They did. They went from proof of work to proof of stake,
which turned it into a security.
That would be what the SEC and would allege.
The reason why,
although it sounds like the SEC would say they were a security either way,
maybe, but the reason. The reason why they did it supposedly is because of the attack on the model they had before, using electricity.
You mean from the environmentalists?
Yeah, and I don't know if I would say they're environmentalists, but certainly that was the argument. The argument didn't make any sense. The numbers
from
didn't
the watermelons.
Match up. Yeah. So
green on the outside, and red on the inside. Yeah.
But it's just curious how they pushed it into this direction where, oh, well, now we're going to regulate it as a security. And it's one of the top.
Ethereum is number two.
Top. What would you call it? Cryptocurrency? I don't know if you call it cryptocurrency.
It's crypto. That's sort of it's a platform. It's a crypto. Yeah, it's all of those things.
Yeah, it's kind of a multiple different things there. But
so they say they want clarity around the SEC's views of staking services. Just 2 days later, we received this Wells notice that includes our staking services, the same staking services we referenced 57 times in our filing with the SEC in 2021 when they approved us to become a public company. More importantly, Coinbase is not the only one raising these concerns. Even courts are questioning the SEC's inconsistent positions and lack of guidance to the industry.
Whatever you do, they'll outlaw it after the fact by declaring it illegal, and they'll come after you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you do. There is no way to be safe from these monsters.
Right. Oh, they'll change the rules as needed to keep coming after you. In fact,
psychopaths play the game.
If I recall correctly, in the library case, they said at one point they didn't want to provide the registration rules or whatever because then someone would figure out how to get around them.
Wow.
They might even obey them.
Yeah. So it's incredibly dishonest and thuggish what these people are doing, but that's what you should expect from the federal government gang. That's what they do. They destroy the people who are not the connected crowd. And Coinbase did their best to be the connected few. They wanted to be on the inside of all these regulators. They wanted to be chummy. They wanted to be buddy-buddy. They were trying to cozy on up since day one. I always tell this story. I saw it in, I think it was 2013 when Mark and I went to the very first Bitcoin conference.
I remember this.
It may not have been the first ever Bitcoin conference, but it was our first Bitcoin conference.
I remember the story anyway.
Yeah. And
I wasn't there, but
we were at one of those soirees where, you know, it's an open bar. You paid a few $100 for the ticket, so they give you an open bar. In this case, it was sponsored by Coinbase and this other company, Trade Hill, which subsequently went out of business. But I was standing there as this guy, Brian Armstrong, and I remember what he looks like because he looks like an old friend of mine who also happened to be named Brian from high school. So, like, I specifically remember him and the other guy, Trade Hill. I think he was Orion. And then there was this tall, skinny, older woman who's an attorney standing there. And the three of them were talking, and I'm standing there too, and I'm just listening as they're all talking about how they're going to form a White Hats Club and they're going to join together to tell the federal government that they are going to reject any money from the Silk Road, and they're going to tag certain bitcoins as bad bitcoins and other bitcoins as good bitcoins.
Whatever happened with that?
I don't know if it ever went anywhere because Trade Hill went under, and maybe they I don't know. Maybe it just never got around to doing it, or they figured they'd curry favor in some other way. But that was what they were thinking at the time, was that they were going to show the federal government how obedient they are, and we're going to help fight the war on drugs, and we're here to stop the bad Bitcoins, and we're going to join together for this. And I just stood there and listened to it quietly. So, yeah, I mean, they've been trying to do this for as long as they have been in existence. And this is their reward, is a going to be a slap in the face by the SEC in the form of what is likely to be a pending lawsuit. That is the point of what they call the Wells Notice that they received on Wednesdays, to give them a heads up of get ready, because a lawsuit's coming. And if you don't settle like Kraken did, their competitor, for $30 million, well, Kraken decided to settle on that case because to fight it, they figured would cost more than $30 million. So they were just like, you know what? This isn't worth it. We're probably not going to win this. We're going to spend way more money on lawyers just trying to fight this thing. And all we have to do is turn off our staking. Fine. We'll just turn off staking. Say, sorry, U.S. users. We'll still do it for everybody else in the world. Anybody else that's got a Kraken account, you can still do staking. But if you're in the U.S., sorry, you're screwed.
So it's not just an attack on the crypto industry. It's also an attack on America.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because
the American people.
It means that the American people will be cheated of the opportunities that everyone else will have.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everyone else can do staking.
Yeah.
Americans, well, not an option.
They can provide services. American companies can't provide staking services.
Well,
so.
Right. And the odds that they're going to go after you for doing staking on your own personal computer, probably pretty small, because they're not going to know about that, and you're a small fry by comparison. They're not going to extract millions of dollars out of the average, you know, staking person. So I'm not saying you can't do staking. You just can't have somebody else do it for you on like a business level. So they're going to find out about that. Any company that's doing staking as a service, and they're going to go after them. In the library case, one of the things we learned from our conversation with Jeremy Kaufman here on the air after the ruling had come out that that library had lost the case is that the SEC claims that simply because, even though there's all these utilities to the library token, that simply because library had some of its own token was enough for them to say this is a security. They said that.
I mean, that's
they
crazy.
Said that giving it's, away, because remember, security is supposed to be something that could go up and down in value. You could lose money.
It's supposed
on,
to be
right?
tied to the company. If the company does good, then you somehow profit.
That's what you would think.
But that's not how you know the library is versus the company, because you can have a security in the library and.
Like stock.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But at the same time, somebody who just has a token, they have no financial interest.
They have no say.
In the
they
company.
Have no financial
right.
interest. They don't have any voting power or
anything. It was never
like
sold
that.
To them that way.
No,
not by certainly
but
not
apparently
by a library.
That didn't matter. Apparently that didn't matter. Just the fact that they had, you know, a pre-mine or whatever. They had some number of millions or whatever of library tokens. And it didn't matter that they were giving them away. Because you would say, oh, well, sure, maybe you could see that if they were selling these things and telling people that they could go up in value, then that's a security. But they were giving them away. But apparently, according to Jeremy, in the interview we had with him, that counts as a sale.
How does
you
giving
could lose
something
your
away
nothing.
Count as a sale?
Right. You could lose the free thing that we gave to you.
That's crazy.
Because when you join library, they give you like 50 tokens for free.
Right.
But that apparently was a sale of a security, according to the SEC. And the judge found in their favor. So that's how insane this is. You can't see. The thing is, we've tried to just look at the definition of a security, and it seems real simple, like we were just talking about. A thing that's tied to is the success or failure of a company that gives you some sort of say in how that, you know, company does things in the future, like a stock. But no, it's apparently a much wider definition. When it all comes down to it, and even gifts are securities.
Yeah, they try to interpret things they actually use this term in court, most favorably to the government.
Oh yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Let's see. The other thing they have to say here is Coinbase. They talk about their rigorous process that they shared with the SEC to become a public company. They analyze whether the asset could be considered a security, and it considers regulatory compliance and information security aspects of the asset. 90%+ of the assets we review are ultimately not listed because they don't meet our standards.
Well, what are your standards?
Well, they won't tell you. We're talking about Coinbase in this case. Coinbase has rejected hundreds of assets because they didn't meet them. This is exactly why we're so eager to engage in registration discussions with the SEC to find a home for assets like these that can't currently be listed on any exchange. As we've explained before, our staking services are not securities under any legal standard, including the Howey test, which assesses whether a product is an investment contract.
Fiat currencies also have issues when it comes to maintaining their value, and they're actually designed to go down, but it's even on the downward, you know, even as they're designed to go down, they don't want them to go down too fast, too quick.
Right.
But often they do end up going down too fast,
hyperinflation.
Too quick. Well, not always hyperinflation, but like, for example, the Canadian dollar dropped 40% over like 4 years, which was faster than it should. Currently, it's something like 18-20%, you know, as far as the U.S. dollar has been declining, where they're aiming for 2-3% is at least that's officially is what they say they aim for. So
Canadians inflating 18%. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?
No. Two different examples. The Canadian dollar dropped about 40% over 4 years, I believe, a number of
years
ago.
You mean compared to the U.S. dollar?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the U.S. dollar lost, you know, usually it's designed to lose about 2-3% of value a year. Well, it's not. It's losing something like 18-20% of value a year, depending
that would
on what
be
numbers
a,
you're looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, I was going to say
what
that would
scale
be
a, you're using. But
that would be the older scale. Their official numbers are like 6-9% in the last year.
Yeah.
Speaking of the dollar stable coins, did you guys hear about Custodia Bank? Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
So there's this lady named Caitlin Long. She actually used to live here in the Cheshire County area by coincidence. She was a Free Stater. She ended up moving out to Wyoming and got involved in the Wyoming statutes that they updated back in, I think, 2019, which made Wyoming the most friendly place for cryptocurrency businesses to move in the United States. Sadly, New Hampshire is not that place. Wyoming is. New Hampshire's trying to adopt some of the Wyoming laws now here, and Keith Ammon has been working on that here. But Caitlin Long was one of the people, and she's been to the crypto conferences that some of us went to here in New Hampshire when Bruce Fenton was doing those conferences. So you may have actually met her at some point. But anyway, she founded this company called – it's now called Custodia Bank, and they put in an application with the Federal Reserve. And what they did was they formed this bank in Wyoming because Wyoming has a special depository, I forget what the I stands for, insurance company or something like that. It's a bank, but it's not a bank, but it's essentially a bank. Anyway, it's something that's special to Wyoming. And so they went there to form this thing in Wyoming. They formed it. They jumped through the hoops. They filled out all the forms. They did everything right. And then they applied. So they created this bank in Wyoming, and then they said, all right, well, we want to join the Federal Reserve System. We want to be able to send a wire transfer. We want to be able to receive wire transfers, right? They want to be part of that system. And they applied for that. And then the Federal Reserve sat on it, and they sat on it, and they sat on it for years, for 2 years. And then they finally came out with their rejection letter.
Yeah. And they broke the law in the process, if I recall.
They're being sued now by Custodia Bank.
They're required to respond within a certain amount of time, and they did not respond within that time.
That's correct.
And then they rejected it.
The Federal Reserve has now put out some sort of a statement, and this was published on A. Pompliano Pomp on Twitter. He's got an excerpt from it here, and he says, Custodia Bank sought Fed approval as a bank that holds $1.08 for every $1 deposited.
No, wow, 108% reserves.
Yes, no fractional reserve lending, no nonsense. They were denied. The Fed blamed bank runs as one reason that they denied Custodia's application. The irony,
because they would be a safe haven if the fractional reserve banks were going under. So they would protect consumers and the government doesn't want consumers protected.
So here's the excerpt from the actual... Yeah, it's interesting.
That is just mind-blowing. Yeah. Not that they did it, but that they were actually that honest about it, that was the problem. I would expect them to just assassinate the people involved.
Here it is in their own words.
It's not too late. They might still do it.
Well, they might, but now they've told some truth. Mm. So, and I mean, they might be charged because truth is treason in the empire of lies.
Here's the excerpt from the Federal Reserve's explanation. Quote, Additionally, the admission of an uninsured deposit-taking institution to Federal Reserve membership is unprecedented since the creation of Federal Deposit Insurance in 1933 and requires careful consideration of the heightened micro and macro prudential risks of wholly uninsured deposit-taking. The absence... So, again, they're not
uninsured
members...
Uninsured, except that they have 100% returns, yeah. Reserves. So there's nothing
Why
to
do you need
insure.
The insurance?
Yeah.
You know, this is an interesting question, saying uninsured, because what if they go and get an insurance policy from an insurance company, because you can get private
insurance.
Right,
sure.
That has nothing to do with the government.
Great question.
Wow.
Of course, they didn't know, so they might not
They're
have that.
They're probably referring to FDIC insurance.
I suspect the Fed is.
I'm sure that'll be their next response.
Doesn't make sense or apply when you're not running the fractional reserve scam in the first place.
Right. I mean, you would still need insurance against, like, robbery or whatever, right? Like,
right.
So if somebody comes in and puts a gun to your teller's head and then they empty the vault or
there's,
something like that.
You know, it's interesting because there's also there's two different organizations for FDIC. It's not called FDIC for the credit unions.
NCUA.
I mean. Mm-hmm. Right. There's actually different insurance already out there. Mm-hmm. So,
well, but again, NCUA wouldn't apply because it's not a credit union.
Sure.
And they're not really a bank either. And they would probably say, if they got insurance from Lloyd's of London or whoever,
yep,
instead of the FDIC, they would probably turn their nose up at that and say, well, you can't trust private insurers. We can only accept our own insurance.
You can only trust the psychopaths who won't even tell you what the rules are.
So here's the next sentence. There's only a couple more sentences here on their excuse for why they rejected Custodia Bank. And this is just an excerpt from God knows how many pages. Quote, "The absence of deposit insurance coverage at Custodia could increase the firm's risk of runs and
how?
Contagion." I have no idea how. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
If you ask 100% reserve institution for your money,
they've
have
got
it.
Yep.
They don't need to be insured against not having it.
And the final statement. "This is especially concerning because the global crypto asset industry on which Custodia has focused its business model is highly susceptible to runs, as recent events have demonstrated."
Oh, wow. It's so much more complicated than that.
And when they say runs, they're talking about targeted assassinations by the psychopaths. This may be the time that the whole S-House goes up in flames.
I sure hope so.
As Jim Morrison put it. And it can't happen to a nicer bunch of monsters.
I have to wonder if it does go up in flames, what are the New Hampshire state reps going to say in response?
To secession?
Secession, to, you know, I don't know.
They'll still have an excuse.
Maybe setting up our own banks, you know, independent banks.
Jason Gerhard proposed a state bank this year.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I don't know if it got voted on by the full state house yet, though.
A state bank, is that like...
Yeah,
North Dakota has one. They've had one for 100 years or something.
I think that's
like
a great idea.
Would that be a private or a government? And
I believe it would be a government
like another
entity.
Federal reserve at the state level.
I think there's actually some benefit to doing a state government bank, and in that you would then end up going through the state government bank as opposed to the FDIC or going through the Fed bank directly. And I know this doesn't sound good, but if you force other banks to go through the state bank, the Feds all of a sudden, you know, what are they going to do? They have to cut out every single bank.
I would be very frightened by that, because that puts a lot of big money into the hands of the state legislature, and they are as subject to corruption as anyone else. Even the guys we know and we like are subject to temptation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think this would be a good question for Jason, and maybe he could call into the show on a Friday and you guys can query him about this. But the way he pitched it, and I'm not going to be the expert on this, but the way he pitched it was the idea is if the state bank, it would be a bank only for the state. It wouldn't allow private accounts. So it would be the state essentially loaning itself money rather than coming into TD Bank or something to get funding, and so, then having to pay a ton of money in interest back to the bank. It wouldn't have to pay interest, and so therefore it would keep costs of state projects down because of that. That's, I think, one of the basic concepts.
So I misunderstood.
I don't know where they would get the money from in the first place if it would just be taxes.
What he was trying to do. I thought the idea would be it would be a bank for other banks, like the central
bank. Not a banker's
bank.
No.
Yeah,
no.
A central bank. But the benefit, I think, of that would be is if you force everybody to go to the state. New Hampshire bank. Yeah, a state bank for the banks in New Hampshire. If you force them all to go through the state bank, well, then – if the feds say no to accessing things like ACH and wire, well, all of a sudden they've cut out all the banks in New Hampshire from accessing it. It would undermine their ability to influence.
That would be an awful lot of force, though. And the thing is, it's not like
New
Hampshire banks are 2% of the banks in the United States, even though New Hampshire is one state in 50, the population of New Hampshire is less than 1.5 million. And that makes us one out of every 200 Americans.
It does introduce a huge problem.
I think it would create some massive risks. I would be very afraid to do that.
It looks like it got inexpedient to legislate on a voice vote, and that was actually yesterday.
Pretty much what I'd expect, but
So it didn't go anywhere. Unfortunately,
that's normal. But we can keep bringing it back, and every 2 years, I believe it is.
That's correct.
So
we go back to Major Payne on the line with us here in Michigan. Major, what else was on your mind tonight?
But just a quickie, real quick. Nobody was talking about him overprinting money.
Yeah,
and I remember that there is $1,000 bill. I think that they're still printing, but they pretty much just use it bank to bank.
No, they stopped with $1,000 bills years ago.
All right. Well, I used to have a $10,000 Confederate bill.
Wow.
My old man paid like $1.85 for it at an old antique store.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, they used to have $500 and $1,000 bills, and they got rid of those. I don't remember how many decades ago it was, but it was some time ago. And, of course, they used drug dealing as the excuse for it.
See, the price of the paper's going up because they keep printing it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because they used to use those bills for purchasing land and farms and things in remote areas. So it's kind of humorous that they used drugs to justify killing it, because it's like, well, if you can use drugs to justify killing it, you can use drugs to justify killing cash altogether.
Yes, they can. And maybe they will eventually.
A buddy of mine had a roll of toilet paper years ago, I remember, and it was $500 bills. It might have been after they eliminated them, so they couldn't, you know, say, well, you can't replicate this in a picture and put it on a product, right? Because they'll Shanghai you for that, too.
Well, you can use it on a product, as I understand it, just as long as the product isn't shaped exactly like a dollar bill, you know, like if it's obviously toilet paper. Yeah.
I thought you couldn't show more like 3/4 of the bill or something. They had to be, you know.
It's not any one thing. It's you just have to make sure it's differentiated from a dollar so people can't mistake it for a dollar.
And don't be a political target when you do it.
Yeah. What else, Major?
We got all this civil unrest going on, right? You guys know about the debacle in France.
Oh, yeah. There's huge protests going on. It's still going on in France. Apparently, some government building got burned yesterday in one of the French
cities.
For listeners that don't know, the frustration in the streets, though, it's not really about a revolution so much, Chris. It's that they don't want to work because there's, you know, lazy socialists there. So the government wants to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64, and that's got people throwing Molotovs and, you know, tipping over cars.
Yeah, I understand that their reasons might not be good reasons to revolt, but a collapsed government's a collapsed government, and I might take it.
True. All right, Major, what about it?
Well, one of the good things France has going for it is they're 3/4 nuclear powered, so their electricity costs them nothing, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as comparatively to the rest of the world, right? King Charles had a trip scheduled to go across Europe, right? And he was going to visit France, and then he was going to go on to Germany. Well, not Macron. I can't remember the cat's name in France there. But he called the king and says, I don't think he should come here. And this was like, you know, the afternoon after they'd burned down the tall town hall in Bordeaux.
Okay.
He was supposed to go for a dinner at Versailles and then take a road trip to the wine country of Bordeaux and have himself a fine old time, watch the maids milk the goats and what's not. But it didn't seem to transpire as safe for the king.
if only there were more places that were unsafe for the kings.
Right. Do you guys know what sushi swap is? You ever heard of sushi swap?
Don't recall, but probably I've heard about
it. Sushi seems like it would make a bad currency because really doesn't keep.
Coin Gecko. I'm just going to look up sushi right now because that's their, that is the name of their coin, I think, as well. They've got, like, you know, a lot of these systems. They have their own token that you can trade on. Anyway, SushiSwap is a decentralized cryptocurrency exchange with $24 million in volume in the last 24 hours. So it is, you know, it's up there. It's definitely, let's see, let's get a list of all of the decentralized exchanges and rank by volume, and we'll see where they rank. They're definitely in the top 20. Okay, so this is like number 19 on the list of decentralized exchanges on the planet right now. They've been targeted by the SEC, Sushi Dow, and Head Chef.
Wait, how do you target a decentralized exchange?
Very carefully.
They did a little bit of centralization, and apparently...
so it's not really a decentralized exchange.
Apparently, one of the guys that runs the thing is public, unlike Satoshi Nakamoto,
who was
smart enough to stay anonymous. Head Chef Jared Gray and Sushi Dow have been served with a subpoena by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This, according to Coindesk.com, the decentralized autonomous organization revealed Tuesday. Gray proposed creating a Sushi Dow legal defense fund in a forum post, saying that it would, quote, cover legal costs for core contributors, unquote. The proposal recommends making $3 million worth of Tether available. Tether is a stable coin, by the way, for those that don't know. It's a dollar supposedly backed crypto token. With another million worth of USDT available in case the initial $3 million are used up. Quote, we're cooperating with the SEC. We do not intend to comment publicly on ongoing investigations or other legal matters.
That's the first mistake.
Why should we give you $3 million? Why would we give... Right. I don't mean we. I'm not on this exchange. But why, if you were a part of the Sushi Dow, would one give these people any money if they're not willing to comment on what's going on?
The Dow which can be spoken is not the true Dow.
No, you're referring to the actual Dao Te Ching. We're cooperating, they say. Under the proposal, the fund would pay for attorney's fees and other costs for any core contributors who've been part of the project since April of 2022. When Sushi 2.0 was ratified, the funds would be paid out until any legal proceedings are ended. One of the initial comments on the forum post asked how the Dao, known as Sushi, was subpoenaed, with the user saying they didn't receive it despite being a member of the Dao. And honestly, I'd like to get an answer to that question as well. How indeed were they subpoenaed? I presume they went after any identifiable humans and just called that subpoenaing the decentralized autonomous organization. So can one of y'all describe for our listeners what a decentralized autonomous organization is?
Not well.
Yeah.
But basically, my understanding is that it is a organization that probably operates on some kind of proof of stake and allows people to vote on what the organization will be doing. But the details of how they work, I got nothing.
Yeah, it's something like, correct me if I'm wrong here, but your virtual, you know, your cryptocurrency is held effectively by an organization that's decentralized that they then vote on how to pay out, I believe. Something along those lines, right?
So
I'd love to see what Investopedia or somebody has to say about answering that question, see how close we were.
A decentralized autonomous organization is an alternative to the classic centralized organization structure. So in a CEO and a board of directors and a CTO and, you know, all these positions in a typical top-down hierarchical corporation, the decentralized autonomous organization replaces that with no CEO and no high-end, you know, entities or whatever. They're all, as you suggested.
No C-suite.
Right. So as you suggested, nobody, they are essentially making decisions through voting.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.